Welcome along, Fano. It is the very last Rugby Pass Short Ball podcast for the year. Scotty Stevenson joined, as always, by Mills Muliaina and a very special guest today, captain of the Blues, James Parsons. Welcome, Jipper.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's okay, mate. No one else answered their call, but you did, and I really appreciate that about you.
I'm an absolute workaholic, mate.
I've got a beer, and you've just come out of an altitude chamber. Talk us through that scenario.
Oh, that was horrific.
What's happened?
Well, I can't do any high-intensity work due to the old shoulder surgery. So I was looking for a different way to skin a cat. So it's my own fault, cause it's my own idea. But at 4,000 metres above sea level in a chamber, walking up a machine that's based on, you know, learning to go up Everest, the old calves and the old lungs were under a bit of stress.
Are you in this by yourself? There's no one else that's injured at the moment?
There is, but they're doing other methods.
And what made you come up with this stupid idea?
It was because I was trying to, you know, just recreate the lung pressure that the boys will be doing on the field, and just in a different way, something new.
The lung pressure. Oh, it's getting technical these days. Oh, Sam, so look at you, Sumo.
I'm just loving a beer.
These are happy days.
I am happy days. That's a hell of a drop too. How long are you going to do this for?
Well, I'm locked in pretty much every day for the next 3 weeks. So that's me.
So 40 minutes, I understand.
Yeah, 40 minutes is your max you're allowed in there.
And what's that equivalent to at sea level?
It's close to 3 hours, they reckon. that's what I've been told.
Walking up the three flights of steps to the podcast studio, and you've just spent 40 minutes trying to climb Everest at 4,000
meters. Well, I didn't get far up Everest. I can give you the tip. Got about 700 meters up and I stopped.
Just remember, JP, it's about getting down again.
Yeah, I know.
It's about getting down. There's no point reaching the summit if you don't make it back.
Well, I'm only at 4,000 at the moment. They think Everest is 7.5, so I'll be aiming to get there in 3 weeks, hopefully.
But, Jipper, on a serious note, though, like, you know, every year, like the South African boys, they're always at altitude, right? And they train at altitude for ages. But sometimes it doesn't really sort of transpire to the field. You know, if you sort of notice the game that we play is a lot faster. When I say we, our Super Rugby teams, but they just don't seem to sort of get to a sort of fitness level that we do. I mean, is that going to happen to you?
So the science behind it is it's probably not going to make me fitter, so to speak, but it's more around keeping the old skin folds low and you know, keeping the heart rate at a higher level so that when I come back, it's not as hard to transition back onto the field. But no, going from altitude to sea level, you know, there's not going to be a hell of a lot of difference. But I can't do anything else, so I'd rather try and put myself through a bit of grunt work rather than watching.
Just thinking about this, you've obviously skipped the Blues, and you've got a stare on you because you're sitting across the table from me like... No,
I'm a nice guy.
I know you are, but you've got a gaze. It's a very piercing gaze. I would hate to be a teammate.
It's piercing now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'd hate to be one of your teammates when you're arcing up. Like,
I don't think they're a fan either. I'm on my way out.
It's quite unnerving looking at you because you don't blink much either. That's half the problem, I think.
It's fair to say it's. It's not a fan favourite amongst the crew, but deep down I'm a nice guy, I promise.
No, you got a good soldier, but that's for sure. Hey, we're going to cover off looking ahead to the season that is now just around the corner. Can you believe it? Super Rugby, all the teams back into pre-season today or yesterday. I can't believe it.
I've blinked.
But we want to go back, I suppose, on the short ball today and look back at the year that was. And I guess we'll start with Super Rugby, boys. The Crusaders are something else as a team. I mean, Jipper, you've played them a number of times recently, and it's very rare that the Blues get a victory over that team these days. What makes them so tough to play against? What makes them so good as a team, in your opinion?
I think their squad depth. They've got All Blacks, you know, in that front line, but then they've got guys that are, you know, on the fringe of the ABs, pushing them along, and then if there's a few injuries, they seem to always survive. And and then I suppose it's their attitude to, you know, not giving up. You know, we'll talk about the obvious game. We were up, I think, by 26 points down in Christchurch this year, and they came back to win that one in the last 15 minutes. So it's assets like that, I suppose, in terms of their cattle, but then also their mental capacity as well to, you know, stay in the fight.
It is something extraordinary, and it's not exclusive to the Crusaders, but for some reason, when that team gets it right, it is almost inevitable that they win. Yeah. And we saw that this year, not just that comeback against the Blues, Jip, but against the Highlanders twice this year. The Mitch Hunt drop goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the great moments of the season. They did it down at Forsyth Bar. Every time they got behind in a game, they get against the Reds. Exactly right, with Mitch Hunt again kicking that goal to win. I mean, those are the kind of victories that really do separate the great teams from the rest, aren't they?
Oh, they're massive. And you talk about that, the guy that sort of won those two games. It's Mitch Hunt. It's not
it's not Richie Mwanga. It's not Dan Carter. That's right.
I mean, how much sort of confidence does that give a youngster like that to be able to say, well, my peers who are a lot more experienced than me have got the confidence to say, well, you can do what you want and you finish this game off and he'll go away and win it. And so that's the culture they create. And it's not just the Crusaders, it's Canterbury. And just when people think, you know, they've lost the game, all of a sudden they lose the game, they think, oh, yep, you know, everyone's got there's a bit there that we can analyse and try and beat them. But they just sort of take another gear and off they go again. So, and as like Jipper said, you know, it's just what they create down there. It's massive.
Do you feel you still have that rivalry with the Crusaders? I mean, they've been on top for so long now in that battle between the Blues and the Crusaders. Do you guys feel like that rivalry is still what it once was between Canterbury, Auckland, the Blues, the Crusaders?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a massive week for us. You know, I think every battle is, but I suppose the Chiefs and the Crusaders, you know, are big, you know, derby games for us. And, you know, it's the big weeks, the test match weeks, and that's how we know we're going to have to perform, because, you know, they've got a lot of test match quality players down there. But yeah, from our point of view, we obviously understand we're probably a little bit of the minnow, so to speak, with past results. But you know, we always believe that we can go down there and do something special.
Belief, it's an attribute that, you know, it's hard to study and it's hard to quantify, but it's got to be there, doesn't it? And I think we'll get to the end of year two of the Autumn Internationals in just a moment, where belief, I think, counts for a lot. But how do you instill that in a team? Boys, you've both been through pre-seasons, you've both been through Super Rugby campaigns. How do you work that into your daily structures, into your team culture, the belief that you can win?
Yeah, I think it comes in results. I think plays a lot of part. Like if you watch, I think going to the Crusaders and winning those close ones or coming from behind, that would have created such a belief that they're unstoppable. Yeah. And it's moments like that that you have to foster. And It's not luck or anything. They've created that through their preseason. But at the end of the day, in this competition, if you get off to a slow start results wise, you're just chasing your tail, and then, you know, there are a few questions. So it's making sure you've got your ducks in a row preseason, and then once you take them out onto the field, you implement them, they get executed. That's where the belief will come, because you're seeing the results from the work. But if you don't see that, then
absolutely, you're going to be under the pump. You're right. And I think the teams, that the successful teams and the non-successful teams that I've been involved with over the years, you've got to get that sort of implemented in the pre-season. If you don't get that right in terms of, you know, everyone being aligned, you know, the culture, you know, the non-negotiables in terms of setting things up, then that goes a long way. Then all of a sudden, if you start winning, I mean, I know you guys had a great preseason, but then that first game is crucial. You know, if you can get onto a roll nice and early, then, you know, that creates confidence. And then, as you say, if you're winning those games where, you know, the Crusaders won, you know, they're 26 points down, all of a sudden you've got a little bit of belief and you know you're good enough to ride out those tough moments. And so a lot can be said by the first sort of, you know, three or four rounds of the competition. And if you can sort of get a bit of confidence, win a few games you know, on the trot, then, you know, it just creates that really, really good culture, and then everyone believes and everyone buys into it. I think the most important guys are the guys that don't really get to start. You know, they're the ones that really should drive that. It's a really tough thing to be able to do. The guys that don't get selected, you know, the third or the fourth week, it can be tough, but they're gonna have to set the standard. And if you don't get those guys on your side, then it's just going to be a hell of a long year.
I've always said about, for a long time about the Blues, one of the genuine challenges here that I think is overlooked, and you well know, Chip, there's a lot of criticism about the Blues every year when you don't get results, because there's this notion that, hey, you've got all the talent at your disposal. Hey, you're the biggest city. Hey, look at your first 15 competition. Why aren't we getting the wins to go with the potential? Auckland's a tough city to have a rugby team in terms of keeping tight. And you look at the Highlanders and the bond that they have so obviously formed in Dunedin. You can walk across Dunedin in 10 minutes. They all live in close proximity, which means that after training, there's always a coffee here or a catch-up there. When you're in Auckland, and I think this is the unique thing about the Blues, guys finish training, they've got to get home. Some live in South Auckland, some live on the shore like you do, some live out west, some live out east. It's really hard to say to the guys, hey, let's finish training and we'll all go catch up for a cup of coffee, because basically it's in the car and beat the traffic. Is that an ongoing issue for the Blues?
I think, look, we've certainly acknowledged it in the past as an issue, and, you know, traffic and families and things like, for instance, Jimmy Tupou's catching the train at the moment just to beat the traffic from out south. So it's an issue, but the way we've discussed it in our leadership week just prior, we have to bring something to the table in terms of that to change it. And we've got a few plans around it, like trying to have dinners and things, and maybe starting training a little later so that, you know, we finish a little later and then we can have team dinners and stuff in our complex, which is, you know, second to none.
Yeah, it's great.
So, we know it's an issue, but we're also trying to implement things that, you know, can change it up. And I think the biggest thing is, as a player and as an individual, you've just got to bring something to the table for the culture and whatever that is. You know, some people like horse racing and punting, and some other people enjoy a beer, others enjoy a coffee. So whatever it is, everyone just jumps on board and has a crack at it.
Because it's easy for an issue to become an excuse.
Yeah, and look, it's not an excuse because, you know, if we don't change it, we're going to continue to get the same results. So we're certainly not afraid of that change. We just haven't found the key just yet to open the door, but hopefully we'll get it this year.
Millsy's nodding sagely.
I am. I think, you know, and a lot has been talked about the Blues and what talent they have got. But, you know, coming out of the preseason last year, there's even the other teams were talking about, you know, this is, you know, the Blues are looking really, really good. You know, this, you know, they've got an exciting team, and they have. You've got a lot of talent. There's a lot of leadership there as well. So in some ways, I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, I'm actually quite excited, you know, that it, you know, the Super Rugby season has finished for this year. But, you know, here's another chance now to see, which I believe, you know, I'm honestly confident that the Blues will have a decent year.
I'm the same with you. I start every season feeling that way because on
so
paper, so does Jibber. Starts every year staring at everyone, going, "This ain't bad. This ain't bad."
I got to make sure I smile tomorrow now.
You do. Yeah, that's it. It's the raising of the eye. Are you having Botox or something? There's no frown lines either.
That's why headgear's pushed it down for so long. It's buggered.
Yeah, you always start the year, and I think we can say for a long time on paper the Blues always look $1 million. They do, but you know I think there's a. I mean, we could spend all podcast trying to figure out why results haven't gone ways and whatever. And Jipper, you spent a long time. This is what, your 10th season of Super Rugby, and I know you've done some serious soul searching over the time. But look, it's by the by. I mean, we're in pre-season again. The Crusaders are the defending champions, and they'll be thinking the same. They'll be thinking, right, we're good to go. Most of their players have re-signed. They've lost very few. They've added some more depth, especially out wide. What is it with the Crusaders and white boy wingers, by the way? I mean, they give more white people hope than any other team in New Zealand.
It's because of those Crusaders. Other Fijian wingers that they got down there as well.
They've got Fijian wingers and white wingers.
Great blend, eh?
Yeah, it's a very good blend.
Yeah.
I like it.
Matt Duffy for us.
You've got Matt Duffy? Yes. That's a good point.
Yes.
That is a good point.
Rico's not bad.
Rico goes, I know. See, I'm looking at your backline thinking, that's all right. Let down a bit at hooker, but I mean, apart from that. Well, the Super Rugby format obviously needed to be worked on, and it has been worked on. Are you happy about the changes? I mean, that was a debacle, wasn't it? I mean, going through the Super Rugby season and then what happened over with the Force, was a travesty for Western Australian rugby. And obviously South Africa have found a new home in the Pro 14. But are you happy that there are fewer teams and that will maybe lead to a bit more of a breather, a bit less travel?
Yeah, I think I'm hoping also that because there's fewer teams, there's more of the talent sort of not so thinly spread in you know, South Africa and Australia. And you know, that sort of didn't affect us too much, that debacle. Obviously, it was horrible for them. But, you know, I think hopefully it'll make this competition stronger and, you know, because I think the best thing about world rugby is we need those type battles with the Wallabies and South Africa, and you know, that's what everyone wants to see. So if we can make sure the competition's providing that talent somewhere to grow and improve, that's great for New Zealand rugby. As much as people probably want us to pump everyone all the time, it's, you know, it's not a reality that it'll continue because people get bored with watching it. So from that aspect, I think it's good. And then from our aspect, travel and stuff, for me, honestly, it's just part of the job. I don't think too much about it. So if I've got to go somewhere, I've got to go somewhere. If I don't, I don't. It's pretty much as simple as that for me.
Fair enough. I thought it was an entertaining Super Rugby season. I thought the way the Crusaders were able to go and beat the Lions on their home deck is an historic victory in Super Rugby. Not helped, of course, from a Lions perspective by the sending off. But, you know, look, I think the Crusaders will gladly take that title regardless.
I think they deserved it too as well.
I do too.
If you look at the Lions not playing a New Zealand side and, you know, for the whole sort of time before the playoffs, I think... albeit they're a classy outfit, but the Crusaders did it tough that whole season and they had to play New Zealand sides a lot more than obviously other teams. So I think they fully deserve that win.
I'm with you. We moved out of Super Rugby, boys, well, almost in the middle of Super Rugby, really, into the Lions series. And we know it finished in a draw at the test level, but wasn't it great to see a tour? And Jipper, I mean... You know, if there's one shining light for you blokes this season, and surely that victory at Eden Park in front of 50,000 people against the Lions. I mean, amazing achievement.
The massive thing for us is to sort of, that's where our belief can be created from. You know, that's a big fixture, big game, and the difference was our big players played really well. And you know, if you talk about the Crusaders, you know, I think you were mentioning before outside that, you know, about Sam Whitelock and guys like that consistently playing really well. Well, you know, players like myself and obviously other All Blacks and the Blues have just got to do that every week and really pave the way for our young guys to grow throughout the Super campaign, because when we can put it on, you know, I know we don't have Stephen, but Stephen was outstanding that night.
Jeez, Sonny, was he ever.
Sonny was massive. Mm. You know, other guys, even like Blake Gibson and guys like that stood up. So, you know, Offer as well, Chaz. I know Chaz is gone as well, but it's those sort of players that we need big games from every week and leading the charge in terms of, you know, statistics and you know, really showing that they're there for a reason at that high level. So, you know, that's a massive factor for us building into this next season, is using that Lions victory as something that, you know, we can build on rather than just sit back and enjoy as a once-off.
What was the occasion like? I mean, we were watching, obviously, so a different perspective for us. But what was it like to lead the team during the build-up to that game and in the game itself?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most enjoyable weeks in my rugby career. It's you know, I was sitting in the stands as an 18-year-old the last time they were here, and you know,
18.
Bought a ticket and you know, sat with the old man down in Jade Stadium and watched that test match, and you know. Didn't even think that I could ever play a part in a Lions tour at that stage. I was just, you know, a club battler. So, so yeah, and you know, to be there 12 years later and to be the skipper and then to get the result, it's fair to say I celebrated for a few days afterwards.
As you should, yes, mate. As you should. I'm still celebrating, Jibber. What was your team talk like? Go on, peel back the curtain for us. Let us inside the shed just before you ran out.
No, look, I don't say too much. You know, I'm a firm believer games are won and lost at the start of the week in terms of your planning and your preparation. And I think any sort of emotive stuff is lost on people. If you're relying on that, that's when you'll get inconsistent results, because, you know, it is such a wave emotion. And if you can't control that, then, you know, that's when you can get those up and down performances. So, no, I don't say too much. Look, I'm very much straight to the fact and the point and sticking to the game plan and, you know, letting you know, our nines and tens to sort of run the process.
Do you ever give a good team talk, Millsy? Come on, mate.
I can't even remember.
Actually, no, your team talk didn't sound that good, because didn't you lose that game, your captain, the All Blacks?
Yeah, I know. I knew is...
it's a harsh line from me, by the way. I might just go away.
By the end of the season, the guys had sort of started to count out how many F-bombs I was using. So I sort of...
You're a big swearer.
Yeah, I tend to get a little bit emotional and throw a few Fs here and there. So, you know, Stephen Donald and Richard Kahui would start counting them sort of every sort of team talk. I had to stop. So I was conscious of that, but...
You've really worked on your language since then.
Oh, yeah.
So I hardly ever hear you swear now.
Oh, mate, not around you, no, Sumo. I'm pretty good. But to go on to Jipper's point, I think, you know, why I was sort of talking about the Blues' chances next year is I think they're quite settled now. You know, there's always that talk about the 9 and the 10 combination. I think Augustine Paulu was massive. Now you've got Perifeta, who's back, who's had a season under, you know, he played that game, the Lions game. So they'll just feed, you know, quite a bit of confidence. But that night there, I remember watching it. It was just a magical night to see them win. And, you know, I know, who was it? Ihai West scored that winning try, and he's gone now to the Canes. But certainly the Blues can draw some, I suppose, confidence from that. But wasn't it magical? And to go to the All Blacks, I remember sitting there after the All Blacks, you know, defeated them. And that first test, I was thinking, this is going to be a 3-0. You know, they're going to go and analyse the crap out of this, and it's going to be a boring series. But, man, did the Lions come back. And you've got to commend the Lions for that because, man, they come back well, didn't they?
I thought they did, and I thought it was an incredible act of coaching and management to get the Lions through that tour.
Oh.
You remember the start of the tour, it was called a suicide mission.
Yeah.
I mean, five Super Rugby teams, the Māori All Blacks, who were very disappointing on the night, but that to one side, the Provincial Barbarians, it was a strong team. I mean, yeah. It was a great team of boys, that. And then the three tests against the All Blacks, I think to draw the series... was an amazing achievement. And the fact that they could have won that series as well, I think it just means that Lions as a brand, the British and Irish Lions, is alive and well.
Yeah, it's very much alive. And I think there was some talk that they might chop it. I don't know where that's got to at the moment, but certainly from the tour this year, it was absolutely amazing. So you hope that doesn't happen. And the supporters, you know, the passion that they showed, you know, they've also sort of helped our economy a little bit. And it was just, you know, they showed Kiwis how to support as well. They even took two Tiramainao iwi as theirs, didn't they, in the end?
Yeah, well, that's typical when you come up with an inorganic creation to get the crowd all jazzed up using a Māori song, and then the Lions just take it for themselves and change the words. But happy days. We will live and we will learn. Perhaps one day that you should just let the crowd do what they want to do instead of pumping really loud music into their ears for an entire 80 minutes of a test match. But however, we move on to the Rugby Championship, boys. What about that victory over South Africa, 57 donut at Albany? Is that go down as the worst Tier 1 team performance of the year, or did it get some competition from Australia's absolute capitulation against the Sweaties last weekend?
No red card for South Africa, so you'd have to...
15 probably, on 15. See you later. That's it. 57 duck.
And Albany's such a great spot to play footy. So
Albany's such a great home deck. You know it so well.
It's a fortress now, mate.
What the hell happened in that game? I'm trying to think back because the Rugby Championship kind of just goes by in a blur these days. But, I mean, that game will forever stick out of my mind. You'd think to yourself, was it some pent-up anger on half of the All Blacks who had drawn that series were disappointed and they just came out hissing in that game? I cannot put my finger on why they were so good, why South Africa was so bad, and why that scoreline blew out the way it did.
Yeah, I can't either. And lots was talked about, the hype around that game in Albany, the fact that, you know, obviously the Lions were in the finals of Super Rugby. Yes, the South Africans drew against the Australians the week before, but there was just so much about how the culture had changed in South African rugby, and this was just going to be one of those massive games. And then all of a sudden... Unlucky,
all right.
But you've got to put it down to Wayne Smith, don't you?
Last
home game in the black jersey, so to speak.
And that was it, you think?
I think that game was won on defence. If you saw a lot of their rush Ds.
That first 15 minutes, right?
Milner Scudder's runaway flick past to Barrett. And those. That's when the All Blacks are at their best turnover ball.
Mm.
And that's all created through defensive pressure. Mm. And that night, I thought that was one of their best defensive efforts of the year.
What about the end of year tour? Because after the Rugby Championship, I think their run meters dropped about 200 per game. Their carries dropped under 100 per game. Every one of their offensive stats dropped down over that end of year tour, the Autumn Internationals. And their tackle count went through the roof.
Yeah.
And amazingly, they missed fewer tackles while making more than any other opponent on this Northern Hemisphere tour, if that makes any sense to you. Wales missed more tackles than the All Blacks, but had to make 50 fewer.
Mm.
And this was the story of the French game. It was the story of the Scottish game. It was the story of the Welsh game. It was quite a remarkable performance, ultimately, defensively, with a new defensive coach in Stormy McLeod.
Yeah, and it was sort of interesting. I think, you know, the Brisbane game probably showed a lot of teams what they needed to do, you know, hold on to the ball a lot longer, don't give the All Blacks, you know, as much time in the back when they're counter-attacking. And perhaps... You know, the times that the All Blacks did have the ball in hand was like deep in their own half. And so to come out of that was quite difficult, which in effect they had to kick. And so other teams were holding on to the ball a bit longer, but their defensive, you know, that was probably the byproduct really, that they had to defend more because teams were holding on to the ball. But in terms of the explosiveness, you know, when they did get turnover ball or when they did have a set piece or when they did have a few phases with the ball in hand, you know, they made things count, whereas other teams just simply can't do that. The longer teams seem to hold onto the ball, the worse it gets.
And that brings us back to that notion of belief. You know, all we hear all tour is that all these teams don't fear the All Blacks, they believe they can win. I call bullshit on that.
Yeah, they're talking themselves into it.
100%.
Yeah.
But you've got to have the fundamental skill level to get the job done. I mean, why Wales didn't win that game by 30 points in that test match is beyond me.
It's just a one-dimensional game, though. Like, one-off runners is just too easy to defend in this day and age, especially, you know, with the talent that we've got in the All Blacks. And, you know, you can just rush up and you know, take your man. You don't have to worry about someone out the back or if someone's coming through the middle or, you know, if they're going to give an inside ball. All those things you don't have to think about because it's just so obvious. It's going to one guy, then the other two are cleaning.
Mm, yeah.
And if they can have some real active bodies of motion, which the Lions, I thought, did really well.
They did.
And especially that Welsh game, that, you know, there was no, you know, he wasn't very active behind those forward runners.
The times they did score, though,
they were great.
Were sensational
the,
tries,
they
weren't
were
you?
All but active. All set
piece.
Yeah, they were all active.
Yeah, exactly. All active from set piece. And because they're trained so well during the week, they can execute it. But it's when it's 16, 17 phases, they can still execute those skills. That late in the piece, it's just obviously that, as we spoke about the other day, you know, they're obviously not training it enough to be able to, you know, finish those opportunities off.
Just had the World Rugby Awards. What a glamour night in Monaco.
Was it
Monaco? What the hell? What you're
it's
not
a rugby
FIFA.
Capital.
what is it?
Hey,
with
they get in there, mate.
What
come
is
on.
It with World Rugby just so badly wanting to be FIFA? So the World Rugby Awards in Monaco, let's just hold back on taking the piss for a second about that. The Black Ferns, an historic win for them, becoming the first women's team to be named World Rugby Team of the Year. Deal or no deal?
Yeah, I think it's awesome for the game. I think it's great, and to see them acknowledge and to see how much it meant to them. You know, you can't put a price on that, and for what that night will have for them as memories. And you know, World Cup's a big thing, and if you look at throughout the international stage in the men's side, you know, there's been a lot of inconsistent results for everyone.
Mm.
So you know, they took their chance, got a trophy, and you know, got rewarded for it.
And they're amateurs. You know, they're up against a professional outfit, and I think there's a couple of professional
outfits. Can I put a disclaimer on that too? Because this was pointed out to me. I wrote a column on Rugby Pass about the Black Ferns victory, where I said, you know, England were the only professional rugby team. Let us not forget, their contracts were all cancelled just before the tournament began.
Oh, really?
So technically that's the first time a team full of unemployed people have rolled up to the Rugby World Cup. And I didn't mention that because I wanted to write about the Black Ferns, but it should be acknowledged that the RFU did cancel their 15s contracts just before the tournament.
To
pump money into sevens. So, you know, I think they were lucky in a sense that I think many of them, if not most, if not all, got to go back and play pro rugby, club rugby.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of dropping the bomb just before a World Cup, yeah, they were told that their funding would be cut for their professional international contracts. So I think that needs stating. And also, I mean, that decision now looks pretty poor when you consider World Rugby have, and let's throw them a bouquet, that's a brave decision. Mm. It's a great decision. And there are very few global sports that would have named a women's team as their team of the year, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I take a bow, World Rugby, because they certainly... you know, they certainly deserved it. And to name it like that, it was fantastic. And as Jippa said, I mean, you've seen what it meant to the girls, you know, as well, you know, having been there. And so I'm looking forward to what do they call it now? The ASB Awards?
The ASB Rugby Awards, yeah. Well, we'll see if New Zealand Rugby follows suit or, you know, I'm sure they would have been nominated for Team of the Year anyway. And it wouldn't be the first time they have won Team of the Year at the New Zealand Rugby Awards. Black Ferns won a few years ago as well. So I'm looking forward to that night. What does it mean, though, for the women's game? Because they've been acknowledged on merit here as the best team in world rugby. And like you said, Mills, I mean, this is a team full of students, teachers, nurses, you know, police officers, should I say. What does it mean for them? I mean, are we going to get substantive change and investment in a women's competition so that these ladies can one day aspire to be full-time professional athletes?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's massive. I mean, we spoke about this on the podcast a wee while back, you know, that, you know, you'd hope that someone would invest into a competition and not call it, you know, have it sort of side by side. So you're not having a curtain raiser type of scenario. You have a competition. And, you know, usually when we talk about women's rugby, it's the sevens because it's flamboyant, you you know, there's a bit of space and things like that. But when you come back to the technical aspects, you know, some of these girls, you know, they've got it, you know, nailed, you know, mm-hmm. and some of the physicality that they put into it is massive. And so when you sit here and you see that, you know, you're just hoping that there's some people out there that are going to invest in the women's game in terms of the 15s, because there's some talent out there.
I agree. Kelly Brazier wearing a tux too to the World Rugby Awards. She is all-time badass, that woman, eh? She is all-time.
You see some of those girls' guns, mate? Hey?
She, unreal.
Did you see some of the... Oh,
Michaela's guns. Unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Michaela has done a lot of beach weights.
Oh.
Yep. But she's got bigger biceps than you.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Yeah. I haven't been in the gym for a month, please.
Well, it's granted, you've had shoulder surgery. And mind you, you've only got half a bicep.
hey, don't be telling people that, mate. Those things are big. Come on, bro.
Hey, finally, to end the year, just after we've credited World Rugby with an astonishing move to name a women's team as their team of the year, they go and ban sevens players writing biblical quotes and messages to their children on their wristbands. Eat shit. What are you talking about?
Oh, mate.
What, you know, look, if you can't express yourself on a piece of tape around your wrist, then what the hell is the point? I mean, come on. Come on. You're not inciting a riot because you've quoted Philippians on your wristband.
Yeah.
How can you even read it on TV anyway?
I don't know, like what? Because someone wrote Standing Rock once on his wristband, as Kane Hames did. What? He wrote Standing Rock on his wristband. Great. He was told he couldn't do it, and 500 protesters were arrested in Standing Rock. Great. So what side are you coming down on? I mean, you know, badass for putting a message on your wrist, or badass for building a pipeline through Native American land? I know which side I'm coming down on, and it ain't the dude riding Standing Rock on his wrist.
It's just, it was just, this just someone at World Rugby going, oh, I don't like all these messages on there, a bit of tape, and this looks sort of doesn't look right, proper rugby, is it?
Jibba, you don't write messages on your tape, do you?
No, I don't write anything on, yeah, on, you on my see arms. That.
You're anti-emotion. We've picked that today. But a lot of boys do, right?
Yeah, yeah. Heaps of people put their kids' names
and... Well,
Bible verses and...
That's right. Are we now going to take off? I mean, the Springboks had Nelson Mandela's prison number on there.
What has he ever done? What has Mandela ever done? He can't have his number on there. I mean, that's political, isn't it? I'm only joking. Great man, Nelson Mandela. This is my point, though. It's a slippery slope, isn't it? And then what if you got a beef with a sponsor? Take that off a jersey?
Well, exactly.
How is it we can have corporate sponsors on jerseys and a player
France
can't write 20, a personal...
2023,
Roger, right? That.
Hey?
I don't get this. It's just like, just when you think this organisation has got itself together, this comes out. I mean, the fact the International Rugby Players Association didn't know about it either says that they're asleep or that this has just been tried, you know, well, let's just shove that under...
They're in Monaco, mate, when it happened.
They're in Monaco.
What do you reckon?
Gee.
It's just enough. Let people express them. What are you going to do? Ban sleeve tattoos? Ban tamoko? Because, hey, no, we don't want that shit going on here. I mean, come on. You know, rugby's supposed to be a game about personality. You know, like, don't take the personality out of it. And if people want to make a stand against something, let them take a stand against it.
I'd love to see one of the forwards. Yeah, put white tape around you. Have a little message on here, bro.
That's it.
There you go.
Right, but the thing is, like, if you're crocky and you're taping up, you could write the entire Bible around that tape. I mean, that's how much tape it takes to bloody get around that big melon. I don't know. I find this bizarre. I understand that in this sanitized world of corporate capriciousness, that's what has to happen. But I'm sorry. Yeah. If a corporate sponsor or donor or a country or a leader of a despotic empire gets upset because you've put a message to your children on your wristband, then they can beat it.
Yeah. Silly.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll finish up. Jippo, when are you back in the altitude tank again?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm going to have another beer for you. Yeah. I actually feel for you when you arrive tonight.
I'll send you a video.
I thought you were tired just because you walked up the stairs. You didn't tell me you'd walked up half of Everest.
Oh, damn, I'm not excited to get back there.
Well, it's been a pleasure to bring you the short ball this season on rugbypass.com. Enjoy the rest of the northern season. It's still all go, of course. We're going to take a break here in the south because... It's time. Yeah, I've got to get my sluggos on and hit the
pool. Time for you guys.
He's going into an altitude tank. I'm going to go get my speedos and I'm going to teach you how to swim over summer music.
Yeah, yeah. I'd appreciate that.
It's just the kicking. You've got to get the kicking.
And I do know how to swim.
I know you know how to swim.
I just want to swim better.
I know.
Thank you.
It's lucky. I'm like a whale. I'm slow on land, but I'm quick in the water.
Good on you, mate.
All right. Kia ora, kato. We'll see you guys. Have a very Merry Christmas, all of the Rugby Pass viewers, watchers, listeners, and readers. And we'll catch you in the new year, we think, with the short ball. You back next year?
Oh, I don't know, mate. It depends on what? You, isn't it?
Well, what? They'll probably have you.
Have you?
I haven't signed.
Do they still like you?
Have you signed a contract?
No.
Have you seen anything?
No.
I'm going to put some wrist tape on.
Can I jump in on this?
Are you coming back, Jipper?
Oh, mate, I'd love to.
Yes.
Get me on board.
I know, Jipper's
workaholic,
back.
Workaholic, mate.
Jipper's back. We'll see you guys in 2018. Enjoy the break.
Merry Christmas.